One Jet Drive. The New York Jets, Todd Bowles, has hired John Morton as the new offensive coordinator. Well, Morton does have 14 years veteran experience in the NFL. He's a wide receivers coach, kind of like Kevin Petullo was, who we thought was supposedly being groomed by Chan Gailey to take over that position, but we haven't seen that. We've got Dennis Agapito and Herb Lelane on the line. Dennis, your thoughts on John Morton?
Yeah, we were discussing this a little bit earlier, but I'm not surprised that you didn't get a guy who, I mean, I think at USC he has a little bit of play calling experience, but
yeah.
I'm not surprised that you're getting kind of a novice at being a play caller, and especially in the NFL. Again, I'm not ready to kill this move or grasp it either way. I just feel like this was the type of person you were going to get. And to tell you the truth, when they hired Chan Gailey, I wasn't thrilled with the hiring of Chan Gailey. I knew he had experience, which is probably why they kind of liked him. They didn't want to bring in a whole new coaching staff of new head coach, a new defensive coordinator. But I just thought Chan Gailey was kind of old school. You know, he'd been made the rounds. Yeah, he had some experience. Now, this guy he's an unknown. Could be good. It could be bad. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. He's worked with some quality coaches, Sean Payton and Jim Harbaugh, and we'll see what kind of offense he brings. I guess we're maybe looking at a mixture of both guys if you're going to look at it from the perspective of what Todd Bowles would probably like to see in his offense. So am I jumping up and down? No. Am I ready
No.
to throw my jet gear in the garbage? No.
No, he's getting his shot. You're right. USC was the only time he was offensive coordinator. But it still shocks me as a leap from a wideout, you know, receivers coach to an NFL offensive coordinator. It's got to be for exactly the reasons you said, that he was with the personnel that he was before, like you just said, Sean Payton and such. Herb, what do you think?
I'm waiting to see also, you know what I mean? I don't really, swaying opinion, you know, I'm just like Dennis. I'm not happy. I'm not mad. You know, it's just kind of wait and see, you know, kind of know what direction we're going in and the type of guys we're going to attract at this point. You know, like you say, he's been around some quality guys. So, you know, hopefully he picked up some of the traits, you know, some of the things we want to see from him that we need here in New York, you know, so I'm waiting to see. I'm waiting.
Yeah, it's all we can do is hold our breath. Chris Adamczyk.
Hey, James, how you doing? How is everybody doing tonight?
I know we were talking about it, like, you know, this is a precarious position. Who would want to come to the Jets and such? But are you surprised John Morton hire as OG?
No, I'm not. No, not at all. Not at all.
Do you know anything that we don't know background-wise? Other than his USC coaching days as offensive coordinator and the wide receivers for the New Orleans Saints. I mean,
well, that's his pedigree.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm taking a look at it, and I like the idea that he was with Sean Payton. Sean Payton's got a good pedigree himself. So he's bringing some really good fundamentals, I believe. Whether he's the type of guy that we need on this offense, I don't know. I really don't. I like the idea that Stump is coming.
Yeah, we'll get to Stump Mitchell in a minute there. But
right.
There is some versatility there. I mean, he did play in the NFL and NFL Europe for 5 years, and then he did some coaching with the Raiders. He spent, like, tight ends and wide receivers coaching. You just have to think he's getting his shot, don't you?
Yeah, he is getting his shot, but you want to know something that I'm liking about the guy that I didn't see with Gailey, and it's the idea of using a tight end. He's got some experience with that. I don't know where the heck Gailey was coming from with that. That's history. Time to turn the page. I get that. New chapter, new guy. Let's see what he's going to be doing with this offense. Last week, somebody asked me what I wanted to see, okay, and I really couldn't put my finger on it. I've been thinking about it all week. I want to see some smash-mouth football. I want to see somebody's going to get in there and start kicking some butt. That's the kind of offense that I want, a power offense. Maybe this guy will bring this to the Jets. I hope he does.
We kind of talked about it because we mentioned that the Jets had picked up two fullbacks. Okay, this is something we had talked about, Herb and I especially had talked about the Jets not using. You knew the Jets were so predictable last year. You knew when they were passing and you knew when they were running. It was simple. If there was Bilal Powell or Forte back there, they were running the ball. There was no surprise to it. And Forte now, you know, can't be featured in 2017. It's got to be Bilal Powell, so we're going to have to pick up someone in the draft. I know there's a lot of talk about Fortunet and that, but I'd like to see – actually, at this point, you know, with no clear quarterback as a number one or a number six pick for this team, wouldn't you like to see McCagnan trade back, get a few more picks, and then be able to get somebody like,
oh yeah,
you know, a couple of tight ends to solidify with Austin Seferian Jenkins if he stays.
Yeah, one of the things that I always seem to gravitate towards on some level is some type of finesse. We don't need that. We don't have it. I don't want to start going there. Okay. I want to see some rudimentary, bottom line, smash mouth, knock you on the butt, football. Let these guys make their statement and move on. And that's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see some tight ends in there. I'd love to see some running plays with some tight ends being a nice power push, you know. So that's what I'm hoping Morton is going to bring to us.
And we need an offensive line for that.
Yeah,
we need an offensive line to do any of that.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's a tackle week environment with your best pick being Cam Robinson. You know, we kind of touched on that, but this isn't the draft show, so
I have a feeling there's going to be some offensive linemen that go, you know, towards the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, that are still going to be outstanding players going forward. I believe that. I've seen a couple.
We like, there's a couple we've talked about, like Ramczyk from Wisconsin and Cam Robinson and a few others. Since we don't know what this offensive coordinator will do, we can only assume that he's going to have the tight ends as part of, let's call it, part of the team this year. They weren't even part of the team last year. They were blocking members of the offensive line last year.
Yeah, we didn't really have a tight end that was dynamic enough, I think, to be able to fulfill that role. Austin Seferian Jenkins, I think, were he to have an opportunity to play longer, would have probably been a little bit stronger in that regard. But it's going to be interesting to see what it is that we do during the draft. Do they prioritize a tight end as of right now? I think that would be smart football for them to look in that direction. Maybe not necessarily very early, but at some point, I think a playmaking tight end is extremely important.
Oh yes,
you know, part of your offense.
Well, we were headed on that path when we had guys like Jay Samaro, or at least made those picks. It was encouraging to see. And then all the cuts that were made at the beginning of the 2016 season were surprising. I thought we were developing, and basically the only one we kept that didn't shock me was Calvin Pryor. And, you know, he kind of went, well, listen, coaching is everything.
Yeah, he didn't have the type of season I think he wanted to have.
You know, Dennis, I heard today that the NFL commissioner was talking about the cap possibly going up to $170 million. Instead of just the $10 million, it might be a $15 million increase this year.
No, we kind of estimated, in all the shows we've done, was $168
million.
Which would be from 143 from last year, would be $15 million. Now, could it go to the range is 166 to 170. So they've kind of, you know, most people are kind of going right now with the 168 number. It could be higher. It could be a little lower. But we're just kind of just sticking with that number for now, and we're doing our calculations. We'll know soon enough what the actual number. There's a formula they use, ticket revenues and all revenues and this and that, and they put it all together and they come out with TV revenues and they come out with a number. And again, that's the actual salary cap number that they'll come out with. That will be the number that every team starts with. And then there's the actual cap number, which, believe it or not, could be lower than that for some teams. And it depends upon incentives and the way they fall out. I'm not going to get into a big, long explanation. But if there are incentives that get paid out that didn't fall on the year before cap, the carryover money they had, let's say they had $1 million and they paid out $2 million in incentives that weren't included on the 2016 cap, believe it or not, their cap will go down $1 million. So there's a few things to shake out still. But that 168 number is kind of what they're talking about, and that's $15 million higher than what it was last year.
Listen, guys, something I wanted to get out of the way, and it's kind of off track here, and I apologize. Would you guys be opposed to the Jets trading back from six and perhaps picking up additional draft picks, Kevin?
Actually, I think that that should be the course of action that we take. You know, I don't know, maybe does it seem so outlandish to say that if what it is that we're looking at is an embrace of a rebuild, I think it would be smart to say that acquiring more capital it should be our prime objective. So, you know, number six is intriguing. If you see a guy like Deshaun Watson and you think, you know, he's the transitional player that we should be going after, then I can see them making that move. But if you don't see that guy there, I think number six is a really juicy tidbit to kind of dangle in front of somebody that might have their eyes on somebody that they feel is a transitional player. So, you know, I think trading back from six would be a wise decision. You know, maybe package a pick and move back up towards the end of the first round or what have you, or swap picks with someone in particular. But I think more picks is necessary. Number six is enticing, but based on what it is that we know about team needs overall, I think it would be a much better idea for us to try at least to acquire maybe an additional two picks if possible.
Herb, what do you think?
I mean, definitely. I would like to, of course, like to get more picks. But at the same time, if there's a guy that they want at six, that they think is the guy, stand pat and get the guy you want. You know, I don't want to just trade back just to have more and not get the guys that I want or the guys that I need. You know, we had 12, a few years ago, and look how that worked out. You know, I just want to get the guy that we want. You know what I mean?
We need a few guys. You know, we need a few guys.
I understand
guys,
that.
Right?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
We
may have additional needs.
I fully understand that. You know, but I understand that, and that's a sensible way to go, and I don't disagree. My thing is, if there is a guy that they want at six, that they believe is the guy, get the guy. Don't shuffle your feet. Don't second thought. Well, maybe I should. We might need more. If the guy that you want is a chick, you got to take.
It's the same old question at BPA where everybody says you pick the best player at your top draft pick, or you pick the best player for your needs for your team.
I think that's going to be hard for us at six, though, because there's going to be some really quality talent available there in positions that may not actually be as sexy to some folks, you know. Like the kid hooker, the safety
that
people been kicking around. You know, I think that's a smart move. The kid's a beast. And if really what we're talking about is building, you know, the foundation, why not start with a guy who literally is going to be your all-purpose guy and partner him up with Pryor, who, you know, who may need that to be able to push his game a little further.
But is Maccagnan going to be afraid to pick that high, a player that high? I see exactly what you're talking about, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
But is he going to say, okay, I can't pick him at six? You know, the
he can't be afraid, though.
Yeah, he can't.
Right.
Being afraid,
right. You can't be afraid.
Being afraid is what a loser does. You can't be afraid. If you think this is your guy, you got to get the guy. I don't want to hear that, you know, being afraid, scared, nervous. No, this is the NFL. If you're looking at this guy and you think he's your guy, you got to get him.
I'm just gonna piggyback on that because that's obviously a phenomenal point. And just to kind of nail it home a little bit, this is my thought process. He wasn't scared. He wasn't too scared to make that Christian Hackenberg pick.
I know. That was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and that in itself, that's not necessarily a small pick to make, especially not in that position. So you know, I don't think we'll be looking at scared. I think we'll have to recognize what it is that they value in those positions and who it is that they feel are the best players based on what it is that they value.
20th player picked in round one, the 20th player picked in round – so they had 20. They had 20 because they weren't moving with other teams. Just quickly, I want to correct myself. The cap last year was 155, not 143.
Yeah.
You're looking around the same amount of money. I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
And we have been talking about 168.
Yeah, we were 168. It's kind of. I mean, that's 13 million. 15, we put you about 170. That's kind of in the range you're talking about. Chris, I'd like to just get some. We're talking about six, and I understand why you're talking about six. That's the first one, whether you trade back or not. But my question for Chris is, what are you looking for in later rounds? I mean, let's talk third, fourth, fifth, sixth round. You know what? Again, just kind of lay it out for people to understand. What's the difference between a guy who was taken in the second round and the fifth round? Why are they given a fifth round grade, so to speak, as opposed to a third round grade or a second round grade? And what are you looking for later in the draft, maybe that you're not looking for earlier in the draft?
There's a variety of factors that would go into that, from what I understand. And, you know, it's a combination of things. I mean, it could be something intellectual, something emotional, something physical, some history, some, you know. And, you know, if you take – I'll give you an example, a glaring example. If you take a look at Hernandez, that's on trial for murder right now, he was knocked down. And from what I understand, it was because of his affiliation with gangs and his history there, okay? So something like that would make him more questionable or make a player more questionable as far as if you put everybody in a particular position or, you know, they may have the same talent. You start looking at other things. And there are a lot of factors that go in, as far as I know, that go into where a person is placed. But that's my understanding. Now, the second part of your question, I'm looking a lot for secondary and defense. That needs some beefing up. We need bodies. We need some talent, of course, but we need bodies as well. It seems to be in a shambles. That's what I'm looking at right now. How do you feel about that?
My point of view is that I don't necessarily disagree with any position. I guess it would be more of a developmental if they're picked later. There would be more developmental players, meaning they're not as NFL ready. Does that sound logical to you?
I think that's an aspect. It's a very big aspect, of course.
So you're saying you'd like to see some defensive backs maybe picked later who are not as NFL ready but could contribute, could be developmental, as maybe some of these guys like Buster Screen, who I think is going to be here. We can talk about some of these other guys later, about Revis and stuff, but there's going to be some guys who are going to stick around who maybe won't be around in 2018, and now you're going to maybe look at some of these later round guys as fill-ins moving forward for the next year.
I would like to see that because, you know, the old story about defense winning championships and all that sort of stuff, that's nice. But, you know, I'm taking a look at what we have to face, and it's always an uphill climb, especially with the protection and the rule changes. And every 5 minutes, you know, the defense is getting banged. We need people. We need to – you're right about the development part, okay? But we need to develop that – in addition to the develop, we need to develop that the defensive backs. That's my perspective.
Herb, last year the Jets carried four quarterbacks, as we know, was a very big story, and they carried four tight ends, and eventually they ended up with five tight ends. You know, between injured reserve and we didn't really use the tight end. I mean, I'm just saying, do you think the Jets need to use their roster more efficiently as far as people that actually are used? I mean, you didn't use a majority of these quarterbacks or tight ends, really. It seemed like bad roster management to me.
100%. You know, definitely we need to use the roster a lot better. Like you said, we have four quarterbacks, four tight ends that we didn't use. Well, we used them, you know, to block, but no part of the offense at all. And just like Jimmy and I, we always talk about, we were so predictable. We definitely need to, going into this season, I hope the roster makeup is a lot better than what it was this year, you know, and whoever we do keep, we need to maximize their potential. We need to play to our strength, you know what
Great
I mean?
Point.
And to go back to what the question that you asked, Chris, for me, like just like you said, if we draft somebody in the second round, anybody, I look at the second round and the first round as almost the same thing, except for the pay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. The difference is the second round guy and the first round guy, there's not that wide a gap. I think if you're drafted in the second round, you should be able to play in your first season. You should be able to play in your first season versus a guy in the fifth round who you know, he may get on special teams and, you know, may take a year or two to develop. But if you're a second rounder, you should be able to see an NFL field in your first year.
To that end,
Darren Lee was a second rounder, and we brought in Kevin Green as a linebacker's coach, Hall of Famer, Rams, Steelers. You got to like that hire, boys. What do you think?
I think that's going to impact Lorenzo Malden probably more than Daron Lee. I think Daron Lee, we're already kind of expecting big things out of him just from the physical standpoint. But I think Lorenzo Malden needed to have somebody that can teach him, you know, the ins and outs of what it is that we're doing. And I'm not really sure if there's anybody who can teach, you know, innovative, you know, type of rush, you know, techniques more than Kevin Green. It's going to be interesting to see, especially considering we may still need to, you know, and may look to draft, you know, some linebackers coming up when the draft comes around. So I like
we know we need one.
Yeah.
We know we need one outside linebacker rush.
We're going to need probably more than that. And that's, I think even that, going back towards the question that Dennis had, Chris, about, you know, the draft, I think that's where you start to see some of those picks being made that do solidify the second and third tier, you know, of your defense, that do add those depth linebackers and safeties and position players that do make up the core of your special teams and actually may end up being the role players that end up becoming starters in your defense. So
there won't be much of a talk about the best picking the wrong player just because they were the best player available, because we have so many team needs right now, except for wide receiving. I would say,
I think once you get outside of that first and second round, best player available is a really cloudy kind of, you know, proposition to me. Herb made a great point saying that the second round and the first round, there really isn't that much of a drop-off. You're absolutely right. A lot of guys that get taken in the second round, some argument can be made for them to have possibly been drafted in the first, were not for, you know, X, Y, or Z. This is going to be really telling, because I think, you know, just going back to what I was saying earlier about more draft picks, this is where they earn their stripe, you know, by finding those mid-range, those mid-round guys that end up sticking, that end up being, you know,
guys like Quincy
Anyway. Yeah, basically.
That was fabulous.
You know?
And then what we need to do is, if we do indeed trade back and get these picks, we need to get some guys that are the guy. It's great to have 12 picks. You got three guys in the fifth, two in the sixth, one in the seventh.
Yeah.
If none of them are on the roster come week one, what did you get? You know,
right.
We got to get that.
Yeah,
we got to hit a home. We got to hit a home run. If we pick, if we end up in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, and we just say we had four picks, if one of those guys is a home run, I'm happy.
It's worth
you
it.
Know?
Yeah.
But if we get four guys, middling guys that, you know, end up on a practice squad a year later, they're not on the roster, what's the point? We've got to nail whatever it is. We've got to start nailing these picks like these other teams are doing. You know what I mean?
Statistically, fifth, sixth, seventh round guys, they normally don't make it, you know, long to begin with. So, you know, I think if McKagan's forte was supposed to be player, you know, kind of finding and pinpointing guys, I think, again, this is where he makes his money. This is where, you know, his expertise and his staff, you know, they kind of make it happen, and this is where we see the turnaround. You know, we're all going to, you know, look at the picks and we'll critique them as they happen, but we'll never know until these guys get on the field, you know. So, you know, I want to say we should exercise some caution, you know, I guess, in the beginning, but, you know, we can look and see what maybe upside some of these guys have, and we'll see how they play out. But it is going to revolve again around the coaching and what it is that these guys are going to be taught. I think some of the new coaching hires, and I'm sure we'll get to that, I think those are going to be really impactful, and I'm kind of encouraged by some of the names I'm seeing.
James, is Kevin Green going to be helpful to the guys currently on the roster as much as, or more, to guys who potentially are going to be on the roster?
Potentially more helpful to the newer guys.
The newer guys. I think that Lorenzo Malden and Jarvis Jenkins. I'm sorry, Jordan Jenkins. I think they both run in quicksand, and I don't think that Kevin Green's going to help their overall speed. Now maybe he can help them with some technique and stuff, and maybe help them a little bit. But I don't think they have a speed guy, and that's where I think he could be helpful when they do get that guy.
Well, I mean, we're still within this line of discussion, and I mean to that point, Dennis, you bring to the forefront something that I think does go back to what we're talking about draft picks. We're really deep this year in, you know, with edge rushers and you know, with guys who can get to the quarterback. So, you know, when we're talking about some of these third round picks, fourth round picks, you know, I think that's where we have an opportunity to kind of make some noise. If you're saying that, you know, you're thinking bringing in one of those guys, you know, who might be a little bit more of a developmental player and having Kevin Green coach him up, I do believe that that's part of why they brought him in. I do believe that some of the veteran guys, you know, I think he'll also be able to solidify some things in their game that'll maximize what it is that they already do. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I kind of like that. I also like the Spud Mitchell. What do you guys think about the offensive coordinator hire?
We talked a little bit about Johnny Mitchell. What do you think? You're talking about Stump Mitchell? You mean the running backs coach?
Well, I was actually talking about John Morton as far as the offensive coordinator, but Stump Mitchell is he's also an intriguing pick. I remember him as a player. I don't know a lot about him as coach. I think he's been running back coach with the Cardinals for, what, almost 10 years, if I'm correct or if I'm close.
I think he's been there for 4 years. 4 years, but he coached with Bowles. And he was a running back for the Seahawks from 1999 to 2007. So maybe, Chris, maybe, what do you think of this hire? I mean, do you think he can help bring some ground and pound back to the Jets?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I like this pick. I have hopes. I feel encouraged, to be honest with Stump. I do. You know, he seems to bring a bit of magic with him, and that's what I think we need, some enthusiasm. I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do here.
Yeah, let's not forget he's coaching Dave Johnson over there in Arizona.
Yeah, he did a nice job with David Johnson. Kevin, not to see your thunder, everybody else kind of chimed in on Morton. If you want to give your 2 cents on Morton, because we all did and maybe you weren't on air yet, but if you want to tell what you think about the Morton hire, I mean, I guess we want to hear your opinion as well.
Well, I'm encouraged. I'm sure I think everybody has a little bit of optimism around it. He's a, you know, new guy, fresh guy. Had some, you know, some pedigree, I guess some of his histories of who he's worked with and who he's come up with. I'm excited about it. I'm a little skeptical still. I think we are talking about the Jets, so I think a little tempered. I think some tempered expectations might be in order as usual. But I you know what? If he can bring a little bit more of an open-mindedness to this offense, I think the sky's the limit. I think we have some players in positions right now that can capitalize on opening it up a little bit. So, you know, being more prolific is always a good thing for us when we have the defensive issues that we have.
Just a quick question for you, Kevin, and then we'll kind of wrap up on this. We were all concerned about this lack of play calling in the NFL. Does that concern you?
What do you mean, as far as the offensive coordinators are concerned?
He's never been an offensive coordinator in the NFL.
It's always going to be a concern. You know, we would always like to say that we've got somebody that we know can do it, but you know, we'll see. You know, I'm in a difficult position of having to say that I really my expectations. I don't want to get them too high. I do have, you know, some optimism. I'm hoping that they work out well, but we don't know. You know, is he going to bring the same type of, you know, offensive philosophy that we saw in New Orleans? Possibly. He's not going to have a quarterback like what they have in New Orleans. He does have some positional players.
No, of course not.
You know, he has some positional players that I think that you know, could possibly do some things, you know, similar to what it is that we had over there. But until we know what kind of upgrades we're making on the offensive line, until we know who our signal caller is going to be, you know, the offensive coordinator's, you know, his job is going to be to install an offense, but until we get people who can execute, it's going to be difficult to really gauge that stuff.
I'm just saying, he's starting at, you know, his forte being wide receivers, he's starting with a good crop here who can really soak up Sherrone Pete and Robbie Anderson. Maybe there's a lot they can learn from him. Other than that, we've got solid guys in a new way, Decker, and if we keep Brandon Marshall. You know, he's stepping into a good position in his area of expertise.
In his area of expertise. But is he going to be able to kind of work with the quarterback? And obviously, that's going to be a huge question.
I hired a quarterback's coach.
What about Trestman? We had Danny on last week to talk about about Trestman. What do you think about potentially going after Trestman?
I'd love to do it as a quarterback's coach.
Yeah, specifically as a quarterback coach, I think it's a great idea.
We need it.
I do.
I got a question, Kevin. I just want to touch on something you said last week. I just sorry to interrupt you. You said don't go get names. Go get players that turn into names. I'll give you a name right now that was a third round pick, a guy who's pretty darn good. Justin Houston is a pretty good pass rusher. I know he had a little bit of a knee injury, but again, I think this is my point with the draft. You're going to draft kind of guys that maybe we don't know their names, but hopefully eventually we will. And I really like that saying.
Right.
And I got one saying on my own. Things can be fixed quickly, but there's no quick fixes. And I think maybe Jet fans need to remember that because we've tried the quick fix.
Right,
approach.
Right. We tried the splash moves.
Yeah.
The Ryan Clady $10 million moves.
Patience is not something that we've been known to exhibit, though, either. And I think we talked about this, on previous shows and probably a few times. We really need to have patience right now. Right now is when we need to have patience probably more than any. Just
we have got
we need
to urge this fan base to embrace
to
the rebuild.
Ease up a little bit. Yes.
What about Clady? What about Clady, guys? I mean, did they change his contract? What do you think about what they did with Clady's contract?
If we can get him at $5 million, I say yes. If we can't get him
but right now
$5
he's
million,
at 10.
He goes. I know. That's what I'm saying.
If we can't
get him at 5, we can't keep him at 10.
We're not going to keep Nick Mangold at 9. Why would we keep him at 10?
Especially if we're still uncertain about his health. So, yeah, no. That wouldn't work.
What is Chris
thinking of this? The restructures are going to be important for both of them, I think.
Well, they already restructured his contract in a way to keep him around at $10 million. But what does Chris think of the change that they made? They didn't pick up his option, which means they would have been free on March 9th, or they could have said to him before March 9th, look, we're willing to pay you 5. We're not maybe 5 with some playing time incentive, something like that, right? If you play, and then maybe we can get it to 7 if you play. And if he balked at that, again, put your GM hat on. I don't care who answers this question. Jets had an option in a few weeks. Then if they didn't pick up the option, he was going to become a free agent on March 9th. Now, they could have let him test the waters, and they could have made him an offer to come back. They could have made him an offer that they felt comfortable with. But they're keeping him at $10 million. And at this point in time, as long as he's under that $10 million contract, there's a risk. And the risk is he gets hurt. If he gets hurt and suffers a season-ending injury, he will be put on injured reserve. The other thing, second thing I want you guys to discuss is the second thing is this, is what say he comes into camp and he's winning the job, and you say restructure. He's winning the job. He's the clear best left tackle in camp. And the Jets go, we want you to take a pay cut. If you're Ryan Clady, what do you say if you know there's no other alternative?
The team has no alternative.
The team has no alternative.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well,
he has the leverage.
He does have the leverage in that. I would let this guy test the waters a little bit. I want him to test the water. I want to see what else is out there for me as well.
I think this is a reverse Ryan Fitzpatrick in this case. Because there will be some other folks out there who might be looking for his services, at what amounts to be a reasonable price.
They may not need him for 16 games.
Yeah.
We do.
Exactly. Would we be willing to match them if they were, going to kind of press us a little bit on that? Because do we have a much greater need if he is healthy?
Well, that's the offensive line quagmire that this team created. Now, if you're making Ryan Clady your own problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whose fault is that for not drafting offensive line in the last 10 years?
Exactly, and that's okay. And that's one of the approaches I'm taking with this situation. We have to see what else is out there and stop the nonsense. Stop painting ourselves in some kind of corner with these guys.
There's two guys that one's 27, one's 28. They haven't hit free agency yet, but they are free agents, so I'm not going to talk about it. But you guys are exactly right. The team put themselves back against the corner with Clady.
Well, I mean,
it was
a desperation move to begin with, though. Especially after losing to Brickishaw Ferguson, I think you kind of needed to do something to make a little noise on that front. So, yeah, Ryan Clady sounds great, especially if you get the Ryan Clady who was the Pro Bowler, but he's not anymore. And now, we're looking at what's a questionable contract and where else do we go? Unless we really are going to have a concentrated effort and start drafting maybe two offensive linemen, we're going to end up having to spend money in that, and on that position anyway.
Listen, offensive linemen get cut quick. Okay, Kevin Mawai was cut in 2005 when he had an injury. Bingo. He came back and got two more Pro Bowls with the Tennessee Titans. Does Ryan Clady, his two past injury-plagued seasons, mean that he won't make 16 games next year? That's the bet. That's the bet. That's the $10 million bet.
I'll be honest. I honestly think we should try to keep him. I think we should try to keep him at more of a team-friendly number, but I think we should try to keep him.
The free agents and the not standing out at number one in the draft, we're behind the eight ball again.
Here's the thing, Herb, because we've mentioned this, about the Jets being scared. Look, they had an option, a club option, okay, which they could have denied, and they could, but he would have still had Clady's rights till March 9th, and they could have approached him and said, look, we're comfortable giving you this, I don't know, $6 million, okay, and with some incentives. Now, if Clady goes through the season, goes into the off season and gets hurt, they owe him $6 million. Maybe you say, hey, the risk is worth the reward. Is $10 million worth the reward? And also the other question is, if him getting hurt, or even him going into the season and then his $10 million becoming guaranteed and him getting hurt, or even if he plays well, then what do you do? I mean, if he plays well, and then who's your next step after him? Because he becomes a free agent the next year, and if you don't make the playoffs, my question is, are they scared? Because what they should have done, what I would have done, was I would have said, look, here's an offer. You don't want it. Okay, you can go to free agency. If some other team signs you for more than I'm willing to give you, then goodbye. I will find someone else. James brought up a great point. Patience. Waiting for someone else to come out there. And my other point is this, and Herb, I'll let you jump in. I appreciate your answer because, I do think, no offense to everybody else, I love everybody else, but I think Herb is the smartest guy around. That's why James, I always give Herb the tough questions. No offense to everybody else. So, Herb, my question is this. Whoever you replace Clady with, why is it automatically assumed that Clady would be the better player?
Yeah.
Why is it assumed that? You know, when they drafted when they drafted Jameis Winston, they drafted Devon Smith, a rookie. They put him at left tackle. He took his lumps a little bit. He's still there. By the way, the Buccaneers had a winning season last year. By the way, we play them next year. You know, I'm just saying, why is it always assumed that, look, we're scared. Oh, this guy's – he's better than anybody else out there. Why? Why? What would you have done – I guess my question is, what would you have done? Would you have taken the, look, go away, we'll find somebody else, I'm going to find somebody better, or would you have done what the Jets did and taken the risk?
Listen, Clady got his ACL injury during a non-contact play with the Denver Broncos. He was just backpedaling.
I definitely would not have taken a risk. I definitely would not have taken a risk. And look, this is what we can offer you. You don't like it, get it from somebody else and walk. You know what I mean? I don't want to hold on to the guy because he is a name or he's had a name in the past. You know what I mean? Just like you say, who knows? We might get somebody that plays better than him. Only thing about it, I think the club did is like we've all talked about this topic. They've kind of painted themselves into a corner with the lack of depth there. So it's almost like he has the upper hand. You know what I mean? It was like we let him go, and then it's like it's a wish. Okay, we might get a guy. What if we don't get a guy? What if nobody else is out there? Well, I mean, when I say nobody else, a quality player isn't out there, then we're stuck. If it was me, my money, I would have said, look, this is what I'm going to give you. If you don't want it, walk.
Listen,
he's not going to play 16 games this year.
Right.
But he's not the only guy out there either.
No, Chris Clark filled in nicely for him when he got out in 2013 with a foot injury. Then 2014 was his torn ACL. And now 2016, he's out again on injured reserve. 3 or 4 years he's been injury plagued now. I understand.
The best ability is availability. This guy is not going to be available for 16 games.
Yeah,
he's not. There's nothing anybody can tell me to make me believe that.
No. And not especially not at $10 million, which only increases our need more. Chris, where were you going before I stepped on you? Where were you going with that?
You didn't step on me. I just was bursting at the seams. He's not the only guy out there. He's not new. He doesn't have this wonderful talent. that we have to take a look and say, oh, we have to jump on this guy. I respect him. I do. I respect his talent. Okay? But I also know he's just a human being. He's just a football player at this point. We got to get a bunch of football players in. If it were my cash, I'd say, hey, go ahead and test it. I want to take a look around myself. We'll have a meeting of the minds if that's meant to be. But we need to get this team squared away. It's not up to one person or one position. But in this position, we can get some others, I believe. If we look around enough, there's plenty out there.
January 27th, the Jets and left tackle Ryan Clady agreed to a contract restructure, delaying a $2.5 million roster bonus and lumping it into his 2017 base salary. The bonus was due next month, but Clady was coming off yet another injury, season-ending injury. The Jets wanted more time to evaluate the situation. Clady is now carrying a $10 million salary for 2017, none of which is guaranteed. The team can hold onto him through the summer or until GM Mike Maccagnan finds a new starting left tackle, Roto-World. That's where we're at. So they're delaying his roster bonus. He's definitely on hold. Although he's good with the injury-plagued seasons, he's had too many years now.
It was a flash signing. We looked completely stupid with the brick thing, and it was a flash signing. I don't want flash. We don't need flash. We need substance. You know what I mean? All that flashy, oh, yeah, we got Clady. He was former Pro Bowler. Nah, man, the injury-plagued Pro Bowler. You know what I mean? No more flash. Substance.
They can get rid of him, get rid of his $10 million salary at any point. My concern is this, is what if he gets hurt, and what if he does come into camp and he is the best left tackle? How do you not pay him $10? What if he goes into the season and gets hurt in game two? I mean, the guy just has a hit. He's 31 now. He's going to be 31. He's not DeBrickashaw Ferguson. I would rather watch a guy younger who has upside potential in the future take his lumps than watch Ryan Clady play two games, go out on injured reserve. Now, who knows? He could have a fabulous season. Let's say he plays for the 10, but how are you getting him to lower his salary, right? One of two things. You're going to cut him and save the $10 million, he's gone, or he's going to play through the contract and get his $10 million one way or the other. He's not taking a pay cut, because if he was, he would have taken it already. And here's another problem I have, but just quickly, I'll throw this out to you guys. I mean, between Clady's $10 million, now Richardson, they talk about Richardson is $8 million if he's traded. Now, Richardson's not getting traded on March 9th when free agency starts. Would you agree? Probably if he is getting traded, it's going to be more towards the draft. That's $18 million right there that you're not going to have available. There's that tampering period. The 7th and the 8th is when they start making the deals, and then they finalize them on the 9th when free agency actually starts. So the Jets are going to be light some money. And I'm also looking at Gilchrist quick, and I just want to throw this in because I'm just trying to get people to understand exactly where you're going to be with the money. Gilchrist suffered an injury in December. You cannot release a player, okay, who was injured in football activities if it carries into the next season. Now, they could give him an injury settlement. They could try to release him and say he can play in September, but I doubt they'd get away with that. It'd be a grievance. I don't think the Jets can just straight out cut Marcus Gilchrist and get his money back. So now you're looking at a little bit less money that maybe you thought you'd have. And I kind of went over the numbers a little bit. There's a very good chance the Jets walk into free agency with $20 million. I could look at it, and if they keep Marshall, they keep Mangold, maybe try to restructure him, they hold on to his money a little bit. And once that first wave of free agency ends, and a guy like Tony Jefferson, let me give you what I think he's going to get. He's going to get 5 years, $50 million, $25 million guaranteed. I think he'd be the perfect fit for the Jets. Are they going to kind of price themselves out of the market with the money they have available to them because they're kind of waffling a little bit about what exactly they're doing? I'd love to get all your points on this because I'm starting to feel this way, that this $50, $60 million that everyone thinks they're going to have walking into free agency isn't going to be there.
Well, it's only going to be there if we make the veteran cuts we talked about in our contract show.
Yeah, but I've already mentioned three guys that you can't cut now. And what are you going to do with are you going to cut Marshall right away? The guys you're going to cut are Giacomini, Henderson, David Harris. Is he getting cut? I know you can. I don't know what the Jets are going to do. And it depends upon how long they hold on to these guys. I'm just saying right now I can tell you $18 million on the 9th of March that they're probably not going to have. Now, remember, they have to sign their restricted free agents. We talked about that. Maybe some unrestricted free agents out there, a couple of guys. And they have to also save a little bit of money for their draft class, about $4.5 million. So, again, when you go into free agency and you're looking at money and you're up against teams with more money than you and you're going after players, you know, you may stifle yourself some. I'm just saying to people, don't be surprised if the Jets go into free agency starting March 9th with a lot less money than you expect. It doesn't mean that they can't move money off of their roster, but it depends upon how they do it, when they do it, the timing of it, Richardson being a big deal. Now Clady, maybe they don't move him off until training camp. That's $10 million on your cap until Clady is released. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And that's all I'm saying is not just cut and dry where everyone's saying, hey, look, we cut these eight guys and we have $50 million in cap space, no problem.
Oh, to Chris's point, he's not the only option.
But they're not releasing before March 9th now, James. Right now, they're not releasing before March 9th. You know the way free agency goes. It's that first wave, then maybe a little bit of second wave, then it's just everybody who's left. And I'm not saying they need that $10 million. They can cut other guys and make enough space to get players they need. But I'm looking at it saying, are they going to cut Marshall before March 9th? Are they going to cut David Harris before March 9th?
No.
What can they do with Gilchrist? So maybe Chris wants to jump in here because I'm looking at some things and saying to myself, this team doesn't seem to have any guts to do anything.
They don't
right?
have guts. They have to develop that. I that's a foregone. You know, I agree with you right there. Okay. However, I don't see them cutting Marshall. I don't see them cutting a lot of. I don't see them doing anything like that. Okay. If they're smart, they're going to take a look around and hedge their bets.
They have the least amount of cap. They're like minus $6 million in cap space right now. Okay. Also, Revis, here's another thing. By the way, Revis cannot double dip. I just wanted to clarify one thing. Revis' $6 million has got an offset. So if he goes sign somewhere else, the money comes off, whatever amount of money comes off of that $6 million. But they owe him a roster bonus on March 11th of $2 million. He'll never see that roster bonus, nor should he. So he should really be cut before March 9th. Do I have confidence that they're not going to like let it go and say, well, we want him to play free safety. We'll let him go through the roster bonus. And I mean, I don't know. I just don't have confidence in this team to make gutsy moves. That's my problem.
McCagnan doesn't show that he has that kind of strength to do that. But this is the year that's the exact kind of strength we need. Herb, I know we talked about this.
We've got to make some moves, maybe some unpopular moves with the fans. If it's me, I mean, I love the guy. Always been, you know, the type of guy you want on your team. David Harris has to go. We can't afford to pay him what he's going to be looking for at his age. It just doesn't make sense. He's got to go. You know, Brandon Marshall, I think he's got to go. I'm confident in my young guys.
In your receivers,
I'll take, you know what? You can crucify me. I'll take my lumps with the young guy. We've got to move forward. You know, these guys aren't getting any younger. Those guys, maybe unpopular cuts with the fans and some people. For me, they've got to go.
To Herb's point, I want to make this point clear. Okay, first of all, Buster Screen is not going anywhere. People are talking about him being – he's not going anywhere, Buster Screen. Number two is Folk. You can reduce Folk's cap numbers in the last year of his deal. What they should do is they should extend him. I'm not getting rid of a good kicker. He's not costing you that much. He can get at a very fair price, extend him, lower his
Nor
cap.
Nor am I getting rid of my Tanner Perdue, the long snapper.
Tanner Perdue?
Yeah.
Okay, you got to re-sign him, though. You got to re-sign him, though, and he'll cost you about $1 million. But here's what Herb's point is, and it makes a great point and a very important point. Look, could Marshall have a great year and a bounce-back year? He could.
Yes.
But – he takes snaps away from the younger players. That's what he does. And forget about the money for a minute. I mean, the money is always important, but that money, you may not spend all that money. You probably won't if you really gut the team the way you're looking at it. But the thing is, you carry some of that money over. You give some of these younger guys a little bit more playing time. You start to let them develop. And then you utilize that money to bring in free agents you want and re-sign the guys when they get to their second contract. I just mentioned Tony Jefferson. $10 million a year, $25 million guaranteed. That's probably what he's looking at. Maybe you're looking at more. Here's a guy, I don't love free agency, but there's a place for it. Here's a guy I'd love to bring to the Jets. Makes all the sense in the world. And if they don't get him because they didn't have the resources, because they didn't cut Brandon Marshall because they don't have guts, and they weren't going to say, you know what, let's let Decker be number one. Let's let Anunua be number two. Let's let Robbie Anderson be number three. And let's see what we got with four and five. Because we want to sell tickets.
Exactly.
We want the fans to be happy. Stop it already. You see the way what this has gotten you to. And that was the point that I think that Herb was making right there. And it's an excellent point. Excellent point, Herb. That's why I always ask you the tough questions.
Thank you, man.
I love everybody else.
Herb's had an opinion for 2 years now. We love him.
I love you guys too, man.
Hey, what's going on here?
Chris, I love for you too, but you're stuck up in Patriots land. You're stuck up there in Patriots land.
Oh my God, it's terrible.
You know, you heard all the talk this week that Brandon Marshall, you know, has never been to the playoffs and all that, and they were saying that the only team he could actually go to would be the Patriots if he wanted to get that right away. But the Patriots wouldn't put up with all the talking he does and all the TV appearance he does. He's on the Audience Channel. He's on the NFL Network.
Right. Uh-huh.
So he wouldn't get a shot at the Patriots. I severely doubt it. So what, you know, really, what are his options other than – but we've got young talent there that we don't have to worry about that position, Dennis. I don't think we've got to worry about keeping him.
Well, I don't know if you necessarily don't need to worry about it. I mean, look, some of these guys are not setting the world on fire, okay? I mean, Sherrone Peak had 19 catches and an average of just under 10. Okay?
He was the least of them.
I understand.
But I like Jalen Marshall. Anderson.
What about Devin Smith? How many catches does he have for his career in the 2 years he's
been
here?
He had one for 20 yards this season.
Yeah. And he had 9 the year before. So he's been here two years. I mean, I'm not saying they don't have talent or potential. Even Robbie Anderson had a nice year, okay? But is he a one-trick pony? Is he going to develop into a complete receiver? I'm not saying they don't have talent and don't have potential. They
you
do.
Just hired Sherrone a wide receivers coach as your coordinator.
I understand that. I understand
that.
The
onus is on him
now. Chauncey Stuckey. He could be Chauncey Stuckey part two. A few years and he's gone. I see the potential, but you know what? I don't agree with you guys 100% that the wide receiver position is just settled. If the Jets went out and drafted Mike Williams, I don't think I'd be shocked. I don't think I'd be shocked. Would you guys be shocked?
In the top rounds?
No. I think that's what I said. I think I said earlier. I think we're going to end up drafting a wide receiver, and it'll probably be before the fifth round. I do think they want to add some depth, some more competition, because we really don't know what we're getting in Devin Smith. But, you know, letting go of Brandon Marshall makes sense. I would even go so far as to say is letting go of Eric Decker would still kind of give us an opportunity to see what some of these younger guys have. And if we are going to continue to draft, we bring some other guys in to compete. But
I'm not in favor of releasing Decker. And I'll tell you why. I'd keep him over Marshall because of his red zone threat and because of the kind of position he can play. He does an H-back better than Marshall does. He's excellent in the crossing patterns and traffic. He can get separation where Brandon Marshall just wasn't getting it last year. He's not not that he's not man enough. He hasn't got the size to get off some of these guys.
I'm just a little nervous that we're going to get a diminished Eric Decker coming back from these injuries.
Well, understandable, but of the needs that we need the secondary, we need the linebackers, we need the offensive tackle position. These are things we cannot live without.
We need a lot.
We have to make these cuts.
Okay, Antonio Brown was a sixth-round draft pick, guys. Antonio Brown was a sixth-round draft pick. Just letting you know, when you get into those later rounds, it's more about development. And if you see a wide receiver that you like and you think you can develop, you never know, boom, they could just come right in. They can have a decent year. And you talk about Decker. Now, Decker's going to be 30. And, you know, Marshall's going to be 33. So I'm looking at the age. And, Decker might decline. But, you know, you can get away from his contract after next year real easy. He's signed through 2018. He could be gone. So if he has a down year and you got some guys that are up and Russell Wilson syndrome, I'll call it. That's a good thing. I shouldn't say syndrome. Russell Wilson wasn't supposed to be the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. It was supposed to be Matt Flynn. He was the big dollar guy. You know, people say, Hackenberg needed a red shirt year. No, Russell Wilson didn't get a red shirt year. Why? Because a team of horses couldn't keep him off the field. And why? Because he was talented. This is what we had a conversation about this last week, coaching and talent. There's a lot of good coaches who are in the booth or on TV, Bill Cowher. John Gruden was offered the Colts job. They have a quarterback, right? He doesn't want it. You know why? They don't have a lot of talent besides their quarterback.
Right. That's
why
you're talking about guys like McDaniels. Josh McDaniels wouldn't take the Jets job if you couldn't pay him enough.
Yeah, because Richie Kotai was a terrible coach. It doesn't matter who he could have Hall of Famers. Doesn't matter. Bill Parcells was a good coach. Remember in 1998, though, Glenn Foley started. Glenn Foley started the first four games. It went 1-3. It wasn't until he also brought in Kevin Mawai and Curtis Martin. He brought in talent. Now, he's a very talented coach.
They brought in Vinny Testaverde.
Then he brought in Vinny Testaverde, who had talent. That's why they went 12-4.
Vinny Testaverde was sitting on his couch on Long Island watching TV and was called in.
I know.
You
couldn't take Bill Belichick and his staff and stick him on the Cleveland Browns last year and have him be much more successful than Hugh Jackson. Look, you have a competent coaching
staff.
Because
that's where Belichick started.
Yeah, and he started there and
Belichick
failed. Everybody failed
the Browns.
Everybody failed in Cleveland. You know why? They have no talent. They have no talent. Is it coaching or is it talent? I'm not saying you could have junk coaches. Richie Kotite was lost. The team was lost. But Bill Parcells took over the team, a very good coach, a Hall of Fame coach, with Bill Belichick, a Hall of Fame coach, with Charlie Weiss, a good offensive coordinator. But they brought
in
talent.
It's a commander-in-chief attitude, isn't it?
I agree.
It's a commander-in-chief. You can't come in here and be a defensive line coach and not be able to stand up to Wilkerson and Richardson and motivate them man-to-man. You will be at these meetings. You will be on time. You will play your best. If you're not man enough to do that, you shouldn't be coaching this defensive line. You understand where I'm coming from?
I
do,
got
Kevin.
I got you. We need players too. Just like a reason why I'm kind of like, you know, Marshall's not nothing for me to lose. Not to say that he's a bad guy, but you got to bring in winners, man. You got to bring in a certain type of player. If you're bringing in veterans, I need winners. I need guys that are used to winning. Not to say that, you know, he hasn't won. So it's not a slight against him, but he's not a winner. Yeah, you know, he's got these nice numbers or whatever, but does he win? Does he have what it takes to win? You know, yeah. There's a lot of great players in the NFL. Not all
yes.
of them are winners.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We need winners. You know? We've all been, and we do need to be patient, but I'm going to be real with you guys. I'm tired of being patient. I've been patient since 1981. You know, win, damn it, takes the win.
We said this. Dennis, you said it last week. Do better. Do better with what you've got. Do better coaching. And we talked about it, and we agree, and I think maybe Todd Bowles agrees with us, that the coaching up and the development of these players, because we've got some good players, like Darren Lee had to be taken out of the game and settled down and then put back in. You remember that incident? But this is the kind of thing we're talking about. Good players need coaching and development. We've got the players. Now Bowles is trying to retune his staff for the development stage. Now it's up to McKegnan. This draft is – we've talked about it. It's this offseason – is perhaps the most important in many years because of the offensive line needs, the things that can't be ignored. Let's put it that way. The positions that can't be ignored.
I think every draft is going to be important going forward, especially considering we were looking back at that draft in 14 with the 12 picks and how it was, you know, how drastically it changed the landscape of the team. But really, again, right now Mac is going to have to earn his money, but it's going to be, I think, maybe not necessarily sexy picks. I think these guys they're going to bring in some guys that
lunch pail guys. Kevin, I got a question. Kevin, question for you. Big question. You're going to love this one. You're going to love it. Andre Johnson, you think he's probably going to the Hall of Fame? Pretty good receiver, right?
Yeah, I don't think he's first ballot, but I think he goes.
You think he finally eventually goes? Okay, he's borderline. Let's put it that way, borderline. Say they're Brandon Marshall. Maybe when his career is over, he'll be a borderline. But Marshall's never even made the playoffs. Andre Johnson made the playoffs, but he certainly never won a Super Bowl. Is it because he's a bad player? Is it because he's a bad player that he didn't win a Super Bowl?
No,
of course not.
Why didn't he win a Super Bowl? Why hasn't – Brandon Marshall's had a very nice career. Why hasn't he made the playoffs? Why?
He's
what's
good
missing?
For 1,000 yards a year.
But James, I'm asking Kevin, what's missing?
You know what? I think it really has a lot to do with the, with and you know what? Prime example, if I just want to give an analogy, Dan Marino, great player, really good at what he does. Never had a team situation that made it possible for him to capitalize when he was in his prime. So, you know, that's why Mac's job is so important, because putting together a team of players, you know, over the course of a long term that can actually win it takes a certain amount of skill, but it also takes the right type of chemistry with the coaches. So it has to be a perfect storm. If it's not a perfect storm, we might actually see some playoff success, but we won't actually see sustainable success or even sniff the Super Bowl. These next couple of years, and I'm going to say this just because I think Maccagnan is going to have another year regardless of what it is that we look like at the end of this season. These next couple of years are going to really be important for what the nucleus of this team looks like going forward.
I got to give you a bell. Ding, 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 because you're 100% on the money. You're 1,000% on the money. Herb, would you agree? Because, you know, Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl but made a Hall of Fame as a quarterback. A quarterback. Why?
Right.
Because he didn't have a team. Herb, am I correct? I mean, do you disagree with me?
Never had a defense, never had a running game. Yeah, had Clayton Duper, you know what I mean? But football is the ultimate team sport, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How many times have you guys watched that one high safety jump that inside route, and then the guy gets beat on the post. He's got that underneath coverage, and he throws his hands up like, where's the safety? Like, you know, it's 11 guys, and if one guy on defense, and if the one guy screws up, everybody looks bad. Well, maybe one guy looks bad, but it's not his fault. You're right. It's such a team sport. I know there's superstars, like in basketball. I mean, could LeBron James just win a championship by himself with, like, four scrubs? No, it's a team sport. So that's what I'm saying, and that's what Maccagnan's job is to now. Instead of selling tickets, like Woody said, okay, he did that portion of it. Now it's time to build a team. Doesn't necessarily mean you can't bring in a superstar or a name or spend money. Look at the Atlanta Falcons. They're the perfect example. Alex Mack. Here was a guy Cleveland let go. He still has some years left in the tank. He's really helped them solidify the offensive line. Andrew Ricci, the guy they traded for. Mohamed Sanu has been helpful. So they use everything. They use free agency. They use trades, and they use their draft, as we went over last week. And there's another linebacker who's a rookie who's making a big contribution. His name is Campbell, I believe. He's having a pretty nice year too, another rookie. So they're pretty good on defense as far as youth goes. But you use everything at your disposal. I'm very much in favor of using free agency because it only costs you money. If you got money, use it. Make trades. Go ahead, make trades, but you got to build that core group through the draft, and you always got to have that backlog of drafted players that you're developing every year as those other guys that you can't afford, you can't franchise, they fall off a cliff, you know, a pun intended there, you know, their career falls off a cliff, or they move on, whatever it is. And that's what the draft is. It's about the future. I know you get production out of them right away, some of them, but it's about the future. And that's really what these later round picks are for. The future.
Yeah.
And then how many guys you see that are fifth, sixth round picks, third round picks, that maybe their first year, and then they come on, and they're starters, and they give you some time, some longevity. I know the NFL's not for long, but there are guys that have 8 to 10 year careers. We've seen it. So let's see, and then that backlog of, this guy's going to move on. He's 30. Let him go. We're going to bring in this young guy that we've developed. That's what the Jets need to see more. Guys, I was hoping I could bring something up quick, if you don't mind.
We're over time, so go ahead.
Okay, I'll be quick with it. We talked a little bit about last year, what happened last year with the veterans in the locker room and the veterans in the locker room in 2015. Now, they're always going to be veterans in the locker room. I saw the veteran leadership in 2015.
Yes.
Up close and personal. And I was told by a lot of the younger guys on the team about how when there was some adversity, how they looked up to the veterans and how, you know, they sort of took their lead to handle it. Because there was some adversity during the season. They had a little bit of a losing streak. They had some things going on. But they handled it. They smoothed over the cracks, and the veterans helped do that. Last year, that didn't happen. So, again, maybe moving on from some of these guys who are a little bit older, who last year didn't handle it so well, and bringing in some other veteran guys and letting these younger guys who are not so young anymore take that mantle of leadership will help this team, because it sure did in 2015, and it sure hurt them in 2016.
All right, let's wrap it up, gentlemen. Let's pick it up again next week. Kevin Jackson, Herb Lane, Dennis Agapito, Chris Adamczyk, I thank you very much. And we'll see you again next week on One Jet Drive. Thanks, guys.
Go Falcons! Go Falcons!